I'm your host, Anthony Giorgio, and you're listening to another episode of QT, Queer Teen Podcast, encouraging the next generation of queer youth from across the world to stand up for what's right. All right, everyone, I'm super excited. I am on this podcast. It's pretty special because it has actually a very deep place in my heart, especially involving the queer community and spirituality. And I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves and tell you all about them. Take it away.
I'm Jonathan Randall Grant, artist in residence at the American Church in Paris, and currently in Chicago, where I'm running communications for Episcopal Charities, and I also serve as a chaplain to the fashion and creative communities, as well as I host lots of retreats and workshops and paint murals and altarpieces for churches, provide a lot of consulting to faith communities around LGBTQ inclusion and making space for artists and creatives in spaces of faith.
That's very cool. Your project that you, well, it says lately your project's been helping, like you said, the LGBT community, Christians, future. I like the way, I just have to say this because I like the way it sounds. It says, my projects lately center on helping LGBTQ Christians, future, a fresh queer aesthetic for inclusive faith community. And the reason why I found you is because someone by the name of Nick North, he's from Canada. And they have a great story, and I think that's who told me to find you. But they know of you, and like they said that tagline, and I was like, "Yep, sign me up, I'm good."
I actually met him at a gathering of fashion photographers in Marfa, Texas. We were both giving workshops down there.
I love that. That's so cool. I mean, give me one second. I have a dog, and sometimes it's kind of hard to do this at home with a dog.
No, same. There's a dog here, too, so sometimes there might be a bark.
Get out of here. Yeah, he's scratching to come in. All right, go. But you're probably going to bark while I'm on the phone. Sure. Go. Yeah, so the work that you do, first of all, everyone, you also paint beautifully. And
Thank you.
So what's it like for you? Okay, because you have a lot of stuff you do, which I think is fantastic. The religious element, the spiritual element, going through. I mean, I was looking at your work and the things that you've accomplished through learning about, theology and the practice of religion and Christianity, and how that's really important for a lot of people, because I bring a lot of that into the podcast sometimes. So all the kids actually bring it in too, because I often ask, like, if they've gone to like a Catholic school, a private Catholic school, or I said, what's it like to be queer? They're like, well, and then they give me a laundry list of things. And I said, well, it's interesting because the first thing most people turn to find answers or to find a way to navigate this thing we call life, they go to church. This is what they do. That's like the stomping ground, you know?
Yeah.
Tell me, how has the art part, like designing these beautiful murals, I guess, and painting, tell me what that's been like in environments. Like, tell me where you do them mostly, and tell me like how that, what kind of conversations come up inside of all that.
Oh, yeah. So I think that creating, before I was even identified as an artist, I was already being commissioned to create for churches and in churches. And I've always been adjacent to faith communities, and it's always been a space where I've had a lot of privilege. So it was kind of an organic transition into creating for churches. And I think the way in which I create is is almost like a spy. Like, a church will be like, oh, we really want to make space for artists and creative people, and we need more art in the church. And I'm like, always a little skeptical, but I'm like, okay, if that's true, let's make something together. And I kind of treat that as an experiment of like, what walls that are hidden, what obstacles am I going to run into, and how do I communicate those hidden obstacles to the people who don't even know that they're there? Letting churches know, like, you say you want artists, but actually here are some prejudices that you hold or some institutional values that you weren't aware exist here, and making space for other people, hopefully people without as much privilege, to come in and create then too in those spaces.
So interesting. Art inside of churches is the real thing. Like, it's everywhere. I mean, you go all over Europe and that's all it is. It's just art, and a lot of naked art actually. And Gothic art and like gargoyles and things that are hidden. And if you go to like a big Duomo in Italy, you can't even see it all because there's too much art. There's too much happening in the church because it's all done through artists. So I think it's funny. It's like, I like that you put it as like you're like a spy, and then you're seeing what you come up against with, oh, well, you can be an artist, but you can't really do this. I don't know if that's what you've come across. we need to look that way, or it needs to be a certain thing, because I know artists in any form, like painters or dancers or singers or musicians, they don't like to be told what they can and cannot do. Basically, they don't like to be told what they cannot do. You know,
well,
freedom of expression.
Yes. I think it's connected that, like, we have something to say. Like, creatives are we're in church spaces and in theological talk, it's kind of along the lines of like a prophetic voice. Like, we're going to challenge things because we have hopefully a broader vision. That's not true of all artists or creatives, but I think it's the same, and it's kind of what led me into advocating also for queer inclusion in church spaces, is because, like, also queerness itself, it poses a threat to black and white thinking. And I mean, so in the same way, they both function to call us out of kind of binary thinking. So, in spaces where it's easy to get trapped in those things, it's always both are very threatening.
What, where do you specifically tend to fall when it comes to like bringing your art or creating a queer space for queer artists or just a queer space for queer people? What churches specifically, I mean, what religion do you really fall under, or do you not have anything specific, or it just ends up being that you go to one place more often than the other?
As far as my personal spiritual practice?
Or no, as far as, like, creative practice, like, bringing, like, what specific religion do you tend to fall inside of?
I've created for churches across the spectrum of Christianity, for Catholic and Protestant and Anglican, Methodist, Baptist. I've kind of worked across the spectrum. I love worshiping in each of those contexts because I love to look at the ways in which each is being creative, and each branch of Christendom represents like a different aspect of the faith and does a different kind of thing well. And each kind of gets trapped in their own ideas. And so, I think part of what I've taken away from conversations around ableism in particular is recognizing that every human environment is a built environment, and every religious environment is constructed and is constructed for the access of some people and for the disenfranchisement of other people. And kind of even creating, like, recognizing that and having those conversations within that space.
You are a man of my to my heart, because that is exactly the message and the conversations that I've been having inside of all the work I do, because that's the part that people are actually forgetting. I know people are radical. I know there are radical versions of everything that we do. There's even radical people in the queer community. I get that part, but we have to understand why they're coming at you that way and where it starts. Like, it obviously comes from the person who's the leader in the community and influencing, whether it be positive or negative, it's still influencing them somehow. So it's systematic, right? It's inside. It starts there, and then we got to work our way out and find out why and then have a real conversation with people. It goes hand in hand with everything, right? And like religion, sexuality, color of your skin, privilege. Like, we're really good at boxing ourselves in because we get comfortable, right? That's what we do. We do it in the queer community all the time. It's a real thing. We do it with parties, Democratic, Republican. Everyone gets comfortable in their own ways because they don't have to deal with anything else that is actually, you know, living.
Totally. It's been especially made clear to me being here in Chicago and working in the Episcopal Church, because Chicago's specifically in the early 1800s, so like 1820s, there was this movement within the Episcopal Church to say, like, actually, our spaces don't have to be, our spaces don't just have to be white and boring, and our services don't have to be boring. Our music doesn't have to be boring. The visual elements in our spaces don't have to be boring. And in fact, there's a long tradition of being creative with our spaces and music and liturgy. And so Chicago was an epicenter of what's called the Oxford movement, where at that time people were like, what if we put a candle on the altar? What would that be? What could that mean? What does it mean? What are the different colors mean? And what meaning can we give them? And how can we explore scent and sound and, like, use all of our senses when we walk into this space? And it was really a flourishing, what became called Anglo-Catholicism, like in the Anglican and Episcopal Church, like, of exploring collectively aesthetics and in a spiritual way. And it's heightened to me that exploration, because at a certain point it stopped, and at a certain point people said, okay, this is how we do it forever and always, and which is completely nonsensical, right? When you have this movement of creativity and exploration, and then suddenly you say, okay, but that's where it ends, and now we stick with this. It's contradictory. So I think it's given me a lot of permission, realizing that, especially in Chicago, we have that heritage to say, listen up, folks, we're going to revisit this creative movement, and we're going to keep that momentum. We're going to keep exploring, and everything's fair game, as it was in the past.
That's great. I think that's a huge step. I mean, that's a big step. That actually shifts everything, especially if the leaders of the church are saying that, and they're the ones that are like, no. We have to bring it all in. We have to get back to our roots. It's so funny, the whole point of everyone coming on over here, colonizing and pretty much destroying the land, coming over here and colonizing was to get away, you know, the ironic irony, right? It was to get away from the strict Church of England and the strict Church of whomever, and, like, get away from all that, start something fresh. But they basically just ended up doing their own going back and just kind of, like, discontinuing the things that they were setting out to do, but they never did it. Now, there are offshoots, obviously, that have luckily have stayed with us, like Unitarian Universalism, which is the church that I go to.
Oh, awesome,
You know, and there's really cool, like, offshoots of Catholicism that doesn't necessarily follow what they're supposed to, but they do have permission from the higher beings or whatever. And there's different options. So thank God those have stayed. But it's an interesting, I think religion's so fascinating because it's just it's the one thing that people use too much as a crutch to get away, to get out of something that they know is not right, but they're going to still say it through God or through whomever and feel that they can get away with it. And that's what destroys communities, actually. It doesn't actually benefit a community. It destroys a community. I've seen it so much. I mean, I've dabbled and practiced all sorts of religions because I was curious. I wanted to go to the churches. I wanted to see. I was massively Christian for a while. That didn't work out because I couldn't be gay, and it was hard because my friends were even believing that, and I didn't understand that. And the only time I ever questioned my sexuality, I was like, what are you talking about? You're all crazy. And then, you know, I hated all things God, all things religion, like majorly, like just avoid, stop. It wasn't happening. And then Unitarian Universalists came into my life in 2011, and it all started to pick back up, and I was allowing myself to have an understanding of all things godly, goddess, whatever. People can just do whatever. So I think it's a great journey. And I think the journey you're doing it through, how you're doing it through art, is pretty cool. Now.
Oh, thank you.
Can you explain the Paris side? Do you mean actual Paris?
Actual Paris, Paris,
France. I just didn't want to sound naive and be like, is it a church with the name of Paris in it or actually in Paris? Because I think it says...
I mean, everyone is always like, Paris, Texas?
I mean, that's a real place. So, explain that part of your life's work.
Yeah, so I first went to Paris when I was in college. I went for a month-long art history seminar where we visited chateaus and it was kind of art history, architecture. And then when I graduated from college, I got an internship with a gallery there. and that kind of led into a series of residencies with the American Church. And in the same time, I was blogging and directing shoots for fashion magazines and working with different brands and bloggers. And so it made sense to be there. From the moment I touched down in Paris, I realized, like, these are my people. Like, I'd spent my life, like, I'd already traveled all over the world. And Paris was the place where it just, I was naturally fit and naturally at home.
How old are you? I mean, you don't tell everybody, but if you're okay with that, like, no, really, how old are you? Because I'm like, actually looking at your timeline here, and I'm like, I mean, I get it. Like, traveling is a huge thing, and people get confused when you tell them you travel a lot of places, and like, they're astounded that you've done that because people don't get that. I traveled a lot, but I also was a performer and dancer most of my life, so that's my work brought me a lot of places, and traveling is the best thing in the world. So. Yeah,
sorry. I'm 35.
I'm 37. So, yeah, we're, like, the same. Okay, so.
Yeah. Cool. No, I think it is always helpful to hear someone's age because especially in the creative field, because it can be really daunting to be like, oh, my word, this person's accomplished so much. And if you don't have kind of the scale of how long they've been at it or even the amount of privilege that they came into that with, then you're comparing yourself to, like, something that you could never match or, you know.
Right, no, I know.
Years away. Yeah.
That's my friends say that to me. So I have friends that say that to me, and I'm like, but here's the thing. Like, that's what I set out to do. So, and my college was performing and traveling the world and getting on cruise ships and theme parks and regional theater and tour.
Oh, right,
What I chose, that's what I wanted to do. So that was what I was going to do, you know? You know, and then, you know, I do work in India and I do work here and I do work all over the States. But that's just I try to put it into perspective of like, that's what I chose to do because I really wanted to do it. Like, that's what I set out to do.
And you gave up a lot of other things.
Oh, you have no idea. Yeah. You have no idea, because it all come back. It all caught up to me at some point. I think I was like 30 when it all came up, came crashing, and I was like, you know, meltdown, breakdown, all that stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there is a lot you do give up, and because, but it's not a bad thing. You know, it's just part of it. And you learn. And then, sorry, I don't know why we got off topic like that. It's just, you just keep talking about all these places, but I get it. I just wanted to put it in perspective for people that are listening that this is just what we chose and this is how it worked out for us. And we gave up a lot. And it comes from privilege. And it comes from just really setting your mind to one thing and really sticking with it. And that's not an easy thing to do. People don't really get that. I'm like, if you really, really want something, you have to stay on point and just stay there. Even if it feels wrong or awful or uneven at times, because I'm a Libra, everything has to be even. You'll have breakdowns. Just try to keep integrity. That's the best part about it. That's all you can do. Sorry, Paris.
Paris
more.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was the wrong.
No, you're fine. So, yeah, I was already painting and doing projects, hosting retreats and workshops. And it just kind of, I mean, I think that my takeaway from how my career happened is that it just really happened organically and relationally, but also I just kept showing up.
Yep. Like,
there was something that I wanted to do, and I just showed up until they let me do it. And then I did it until people started paying me for it. And
what
I just made because I had to make. Pardon?
When were you born?
Like, what's my sign?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a Leo.
Okay. What month is that? I'm so bad with that stuff.
August 1st. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you happy birthday, like about a month ago.
Yeah. I'm a Leo with a Gemini rising and a Libra.
I knew it. I could feel it because I could feel it. I was like, I thought you were actually going to say either Gemini or Libra.
Whoa.
I really did, because I was like, it's either a Gemini or a Libra, because the way you're talking is pretty much all of my friends, and some of my good friends are Geminis, and my husband's a Libra, so we're both Libras. So, anyway, I could just tell. I'm like, there's got to be that in there somewhere. I just want to also say, you said just showing up over and over and over until someone's like, hey, we'll pay to do it. Let everyone know that. That is so important. Just keep – I know it sounds so – everyone says this on so many interviews in the world, and I just keep showing up and doing the work. But you actually have to. Life will literally not do anything for you unless you show up.
Yeah, which, I mean, also is a privileged thing. Like, I recognize that, like, the reason I was able to do that is because I had the – human capital behind me. Like, I had people supporting me and cheering me on and encouraging me in that my whole life, but especially during my 20s when I was doing that work and, you know, some days not sure if I would eat the next day. And I would have like little old ladies who would like flip me $5 now and then and made sure I ate. And
how long did you live in Paris for?
Off and on for 12 years.
Holy shit. You speak French, yes.
Not fluently, but my English keeps getting worse, which I take as a good sign.
Okay. Well, you know, and there's also Google Translate these days. Oh, there's also those crazy things you just talk into it, and it literally just speaks for you.
Yeah.
Cause
those are called French.
Right, exactly. And it's so funny because when you go, everything is in French in Paris. People, everyone listen. When you go to Paris, it's all in French. However, people do speak English, and they will speak English to you there. People are not that rude. I didn't experience it that way, so I don't know what everybody's talking about. Jason, my husband, also speaks enough French, and they let him speak French because he's good with accents. So that was nice. It's confusing under the subways if you don't know where you're going because it's all in French. But other than that, it's pretty cool. But on and off for 12 years. That is so fantastic. And now you're in Chicago, which I've actually never been to.
Chicago is a fabulous place to create. Like, it's very collaborative, and it's very queer and very fun.
So, so just explain to everybody what it means, because not everybody might know this, especially my little artists, my little queer artists that are listening.
Yay.
What does it mean when you're an artist in residence at a specific place and you're doing the work for them? Just explain to them, like, what is provided for you and, like, how, if they want to do it, like, what the steps they should do and take so they can, you know, possibly do this with their lives.
Yes. Okay, so this is something I get asked a lot, and actually it's something that is, it doesn't, there's not many residencies. I mean, a lot of residencies are mostly little retreat places that you go out and create by yourself. But if you want to do a residency and you want to propose a residency, that can look like 1,000 different things. And I've had residencies where they have been fully funded, like you're receiving a full paycheck. You have a place to live. You have a studio. You have specific projects. But sometimes my residencies have looked like I just am like, I want to create this thing for you. Can I make that thing for you? Can I be your artist in residence? Can I show up to your things? Can I be adjacent to your community? And, you know, kind of inserting myself and being like, here I am. Sometimes it has looked like, okay, we have this little tiny budget and we need a new painting. We need a new altarpiece. We have this thing our community wants to express, and coming alongside that community and helping them express that thing. So sometimes it has funding, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it has studio, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
It's kind of about negotiating that relationship and living adjacent to a community in a way that's, you know, that's mutually beneficial. And yeah, I would encourage people to explore that. And to navigate that, there's no set definition of what that has to look like.
With the queer community, specifically, because that's a podcast and all we're talking about.
Yeah.
What has been your impact in starting those spaces for them? And, like, what has it actually brought to the church or to a space specifically for queer Christians? Or people of faith.
Yeah, so in Paris specifically, there is one church community that officially is welcoming and inclusive of the queer community.
All of Paris is only one?
Yes.
Huh.
So that church has a, like, small representation. I mean, to give proximity or to give an example of the difference between Paris and Chicago, in Chicago, churches make up the largest section of the Pride Parade.
Okay.
So the contrast is, yeah.
So you're saying there's only one church in all of Paris that is sort of inclusive and bringing in that community, but in the Pride Parade, there's most of its churches?
In Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago.
In Chicago.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed that part. I was like, wait a minute, I was still in Paris. I wasn't in Chicago.
Yeah, just for
contrast.
Okay,
that makes sense. Got it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so in Paris, so my work in Paris has been, with the queer community, has been a lot of meeting with clergy people, because in my experience, it's been that clergy people are more ready for full inclusion of the queer community in churches and faith communities. And it's actually the congregation that's holding them back.
Sure.
That's not always the case.
But it's and tough so to crack meeting those with people.
Them, pardon?
It's tough to crack the people that are on the board or the people that are in charge of the ins and outs of the church. It's tricky. It's even tricky in the Unitarian Universalist community, believe it or not.
Yeah, totally.
How to navigate it. Yeah. And they're older, usually.
Yeah, and the average person in a pew has been told things that are pretty black and white, and they tend to believe that, and they tend to hold clergy to that, even if they're feeling like it's time to move on. A lot of that work, but also a lot of one-on-one conversations, because most of my queer friends in Paris didn't know that they could be both queer and practice the faith they grew up in. Well, you know, whatever that faith tradition was,
yeah,
whatever that, Christian or not Christian, like, that,
right,
that those things can coexist and that they're both part of who they are. And we don't have to compartmentalize those.
No. But yeah, people think we do. Even in 2019, you're like, people really do. Because, well, unfortunately, you know, we've come up against a lot. But that's why I brought you on here, so we can hear another side, even more sides to it, because you can be. I mean, one of my last episode of my first season was, we were in a Methodist church. And, you know, they have had a few setbacks. It's Methodist, right? Yeah, the Methodist church.
Yeah,
for
totally.
The queer community. And but their pastor, she's amazing. She's like, no, if I'm in charge of this church, we're gonna make a safe space for the queer community, because we can't not do that. You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And so I filmed a live episode in their hall. And made sure that I, you know, said it over and over and over, because I literally filmed it too right after all of the debacle, with not trying to keep it, you know, separate, and don't want to bring in the LGBT community. But they didn't realize it's like half the people that go there, well, anyone that goes there, but the people that go there are gay and they want to go there. They believe in that. They believe in God. They believe in the words of the Bible, and so they want a place to go worship. But obviously, the Methodist Church was really not great about it. Well, isn't being great about it right now. But I also happen to live in a very, like, liberal area. Not all of it, but, like, I live by Asbury Park, New Jersey, which is gay, very gay, and has Garden State Equality, which is the biggest. It is New Jersey's, you know, social justice advocacy for the state of New Jersey, for all things queer. So I'm lucky in that sense. But there's, you know, there's anywhere you go, there's pockets of. I still can't get over that in Paris. That just boggles my mind, actually. I did not know that. That is, for a place that's been around for a lot longer than us.
Yeah.
It's
really vexing.
I would think it would be more inclusive. I know that it comes across as a racist place. I do know that in France. Like, that's not, that racism has been an issue. It's like that in Italy as well.
Yeah.
It's like that anywhere, but I do know it's pretty strong there, and the communities are interesting like that. But I didn't know that I can't believe in all of Paris, one church, and it's so interesting. I know, and then you go to Chicago, Midwest, technically, or, you know, Middle America, kind of, and half the churches are in the Pride Parade. That's perspective.
And my experience of then coming to Chicago was the church that I did my residency with here, which is radically queer and radically anti-racist, and as part of communion offered, the first time I visited, offered HIV testing.
What? Amazing.
Yeah, there's just these, which is actually a practice that has been around in the Methodist Church since the pandemic started.
It's so interesting to me. I don't know. It's so weird to me because, like, you know, that's in the Methodist Church, and, like, they're the ones that helped, and then you go and they had that, you know, that huge televised meeting, and they rejected doing gay marriage and stuff. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, what?
I mean, but that's the thing to me about spaces of faith is that in general, they are kind of our collective imagination.
Yeah.
Like we bring to them what we have.
Sure.
I've been around a lot of spaces and conversations about the really evil and terrible things that have existed within churches. And I think we have all felt and experienced those things. And
yeah.
I think it's almost too easy to blame those spaces themselves for those wrongs. You know, like it's easy to be like, priests did that thing, so therefore it's about the institutions. And I think when we do that, we sometimes miss the opportunity to say, like, we created this thing out of our collective longing, and that thing hurt us. And what does that have to say about us? Like, about humanity? Because churches are very human institutions. And I don't mean that in a way to, like, no one gets a pass, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that draws us deeper into our own longings, into our own failures in loving each other and caring for each other. And mm-hmm. I think that should empower us to remake those spaces into something that looks like what we do think and what we hope for and how we want to create together. Because they're spaces of imagination. We created them. We can recreate them if we choose.
We 1,000% can recreate them, and which is a great way to kind of wrap this conversation up, because that's what you do. And I think it's pretty cool. And it is a place that is run by humans that are locked into an idea, but it's not the building itself. It's not the history is sometimes bad and a lot sometimes good. So we just have to take the opportunity, like you said, and see what we can do with that and recreate a space and start to have conversations. It'll be uncomfortable sometimes, but most conversations are for a lot of people in regards to anything. You know, if I say this, if people can show up for people the way they show up to buy that ticket to go see the concert for the person that they absolutely admire, and that's all they can talk about, and they have to do it, and they post it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the apps. If we could literally treat life like that, actually life, and work together like that, then as a human race, we could move so much better together, you know? And that's it. It's kind of that simple.
I think that's what I've been seeing in Chicago are these radically queer spaces that to me are more church than church, like spaces mm-hmm. where people show up around anti-racism and around body positivity and around, you know, sex positivity,
mm-hmm.
And spaces that are radically hospitable, where they kind of center the most marginalized person and make sure everyone gets fed and treated, and they're not quote unquote religious spaces, but they embody what we had hoped collectively that churches could embody. And so I feel like the queer community is like reimagining the church without the church, church's permission or not right now. And it's amazing.
Leave it to the queer community to do something again. That's true. It's true. Like I just actually posted something because historically speaking, if you really break it down, the queer community really develops a lot of communities, number one, because they were searching for a community, so they developed a community. And then there's also like people that have been discredited for the work that they've done in life, like women or people of color. But now all that's coming out because of Google or social media or something or whatever. So I think it's pretty cool. All right, well, I could talk to you for 100 hours, but
yay.
Can you tell everybody where they can find all the things that you do and what you're involved with on all your platforms, social media and websites and stuff?
Yes. So my website is grant@church.com. And my Instagram handle is a shortened version of Culture Keeper. It's CULTRKPR, which is also my other website, culturekeeper.com. I'm lurking all over the internet. Come say hi.
What's some last words of wisdom you could tell everybody?
I think I had parents who told me to question everything and gave me radical permission to reimagine the spaces that I inhabited. And I would love to extend that permission to everyone who's listening and say, like, get together and find out what you're all hoping for, where you find joy and where you find what you're afraid of, and create something, embody that together. I think that's what the church was supposed to be. And at its best, that's what it looks like. And at its worst, that's what it's not become. So, like, let's make that.
Thanks for listening to another episode of QT, Queer Teen Podcast, encouraging the next generation of queer youth from across the world to stand up for what's right. And remember, listen, learn, love.